Game on. Ian, how was the Washington Castles game yesterday?
Oh, yeah. Last night I went to my first ever tennis match. I got invited by Wes. We wanted to come and see him before things got crazy with hockey seasons. So we wanted to bring him to show him how much Ethan has grown. He hadn't seen him since that first night he was born. So we went. It was really fun. I mean, I didn't completely, like, I know tennis rules. I played a little bit in high school, but I didn't really completely understand, like, the team rules of it. Like, it was a lot more simpler. Like, instead of, like, 15 love, it's 1-0. And that was actually kind of weird to me. Yeah. So it was a little hard to follow unless you're, you know, it's kind of like hockey with someone who first is following it. I'm sure they're extremely confused. Like, where does the puck go when it's in the corner? And why, what is icing? I can only imagine how confused some people are when they're first watching that. But it was really nice. Afterwards, Wes invited all of us down, and he was like, you should go meet all the tennis players. And, you know, all these tennis players are from, like, Belgium, Russia, all these different countries. And they were just freaking out with Ethan, like, how cute he was. One of them was, like, trying to hold him. The entire Castles team came over and took a picture with him, which was really, really cute. So, like, afterwards, I went on Wikipedia, and I was looking up some of these people. And I was like, oh, this guy was the Grand Slam, or he was, like, the doubles champion of the world last year. And I was like, holy crap.
The Castles are a big deal, right? I mean, they're the best.
Well, they were the best. The last couple of years, it seems like the rest of the league has kind of caught up to them and how they operate. But I think this year they're in last. And I think last year they were not as competitive as usual. But they've won 6 championships in 10 years. And they sell themselves on the fact that they have the longest winning streak in professional sports. I forget what that is, but... So, I don't know. They have a really, really good thing going because a lot of the Caps game ops crew is there. You know, obviously, Wes is a PA announcer. Former game operations director, Michael Werman, he does all their stuff. And it's just really, really fun. It's really fast-paced, which you would never think with tennis.
Yeah, I would not think that.
Yeah, but, like, so, 2 things. One, Ethan started screaming within, you know, like 20 seconds of sitting down.
Of course he did.
It was like, as soon as Wes was like, come on, Castles fans, hold up your signs. Like, Ethan just started bawling. And I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, so Wes's, like, PA voice is not a child-friendly voice.
No, that's what I learned. I was like, you know, Ethan loves being held by Wes, but when Wes is screaming, he is horrified. So, but then afterwards, I wrote about this, but owner Mark Ein, he brought everybody in a big circle, and this was the last home game for the Castles this year, and he kind of went on a speech, and he thanked everyone, and it was really heartfelt. I mean, you could really tell that this entire team and this organization are very close-knit, and he had these boxes that he was giving out 5 people. And so, you know, he had this long spiel about how, you know, how lucky they are to have Wes there, and then he found out that they were championship rings. So I see Wes, like, getting teary-eyed because, you know, for a lot of the guys, the ultimate goal and the ultimate dream of doing this is to win a championship ring. And, you know, just seeing Wes's reactions to that, like, it was just totally random. He had no idea that was going to happen. And so, you know, he was telling me, you know, I could leave these 3 rings to my sons and, you know, I was just, you know, I never thought this would happen. And that was a really, really sweet moment. And I was so lucky to actually see that. And actually, you know, it made the whole thing worth it, despite the fact that Ethan was crying the whole time. And, but, like, the tennis players are really cute. I love the Castle's extremely creepy mascot of a half-baked tennis ball. Like, its eyes, he literally looks like Tally from South Park, but a tennis ball. So,
okay, yeah, just Googled it. Creepy. Creepy. Not as creepy as Scott Key, whatever.
Yeah. The one nothing will ever top that.
Jeez Louise. That's cute.
Yeah,
that's
he would come out of the bushes to say hi to you.
That sounds like yet another wholesome evening with the Olin family.
Yeah.
I drank 2 margaritas and went to bed. So you had a better night than I did. It would be wrong of me not to mention that. Sure, the Castles enjoy a long winning streak among professional sports, but the Lady Cadets of Frederick High School swimming had a win streak from like 1994 to like 2001. So, hello.
I think the Castles need to step off.
Yeah, right. Ian, do you want to answer some questions?
Sure. Let's do it.
Let's get into it.
And now, it's time for the RFNB Podcast.
Okay, so we solicited questions on our, I'll call it a Patreon, but it's also called a Patreon, and I think I'm always wrong on whatever my pronunciation is, and also on the swilling cesspool that is Rush Machine Facebook. Just ask people if they have any questions, because it's the powerhouse end of July, August seasons, blockbuster things happening every day. It's hard to keep up, so we thought... we're desperate for content. Let's solicit some questions. Ian, I know you've had a chance to glance at these. Do you think you're ready for this?
I don't think any person could ever really be ready for some of these questions.
So we'll gesticulate wildly between hockey questions and definitely not hockey questions. Let's start with the hockey question. This one's from Dave. My buddy's AC unit broke for a while, which got me thinking about this power-related question. Since the power play units will have to change from the end of last season because of departures, what do you think the Capitals' first and second string units will look like? How much of those groupings did we see last season, if any? Well, since we've lost some important players, like Marcus Johansson, probably most importantly on that first power play unit, I'm not sure what we'll see. Do you have any thoughts, Ian?
Yeah, I don't know. The other part of this is, too, is that, you know, they gave the big contract to Orlov, and his agent kind of promised him power play time. So I think you have to ink Orlov on there somewhere, either on the first or second unit. I would assume the second unit. So there's one person that will probably be completely new. I don't really know. You know, for me, I feel like the Capitals kind of struggled on the power play in the playoffs. And, you know, yeah, they have Ovi's, you know, they have the Ovi shot from the right circle for forever until he retires. But, you know, I hope they continue to actually put some wrinkles into the power play, because I feel like, you know, Ovi's still scoring regardless of it being so predictable. But, you know, I'd love, you know, I think obviously Kuznetsov will probably have a much bigger impact on the first power play unit.
Like, he could slot in where Johansson left. I think that's one way to do it. It doesn't have to be that way. Like, that's certainly the simplest and most straightforward one, though. Like, I could totally see them finding another player that could have the neutral zone role that Johansson had, and then have Kuznetsov run a slightly different formula on the second power play. You know, Kuznetsov's that great below the goal line thing that's not a big part. I mean, it's really the opposite of what the 1-3-1 is. And if they were to be radical or unorthodox or whatever, I could see the second power play unit be Kuznetsov's unit with a different formulation, below the goal line action, whereas the first one, all they need to do is find somebody that can really get them into the offensive zone as well as Johansson did. That's, I don't know, that's my guess. You're right, absolutely right about Orlov. One thing I was thinking is the Caps had some important struggles with the John Carlson-anchored power play unit, and I think they made some great decisions midway, halfway through the season to give Niskanen that role. Whereas, you know, Carlson, I think, is an excellent 5-on-5 player, a truly excellent PKer. I think that would be the better role for Carlson, even if it would really hurt his points, point total, and then give Orlov that second power play unit just to see what he can do.
Yeah. Something with Carlson where the other thing is, too, is that he was pretty good at hitting the net, it felt like, until last year. And then last year, the wheels completely fell off. So, you know, and I also mused about this last year was, you know, Carlson was so bad there. I was really, really interested in slotting Backstrom up up as a defenseman.
The Hyman. But he's so I don't know what the relative value is of each of those positions, but I can't think of a player I like more along the half wall on the power play than Backstrom. Like, I don't know if anybody's that strong on the puck. But yeah, I mean, I could also see him being a good distributor in that sense.
Yeah, and if you think about it, that person is the last person who touches the puck before usually Ovi gets it. So if you think about it too, you know, and I would trust Nicholas Backstrom on like a 2-on-1 with two guys coming at him. Whereas with Ovechkin or Carlson, you know, even with Carlson, sometimes I'm a little,
Yeah. So. I would trust Backstrom with anything. I would give him a briefcase full of money. He's a reliable dude. Should we press on?
Sure.
Topher asks, who do you have for a 3v3 using this year's roster? I think the obvious answer is you just pick three Russians and then and run them out. That's your 3v3. I do believe that's a really good one way to do it. Because Netsov, Ovi, and Orlov are awesome. And I think that there's a really good thing to discuss about, like, finding unappreciated, undervalued players to build your power play unit. You know, it doesn't have to be your five best players necessarily if you can find the composite skill. For 3v3 with the open ice, you want really mobile players, and two out of the three I just named are really mobile. I overpower them with skill. Just please don't do the two defensemen, one forward thing. That just drives me up
a wall. You know
what
drives me insane? Throwing Jay Beagle out there to take that opening faceoff. It was
That's
really funny.
Right.
Because I remember last year, one time it worked where Beagle won a faceoff, and then he got off immediately. And I think Kuznetsov came on, and then they immediately scored. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. But then, like, one time.
Just like we drew it up.
Yeah, then one time it happened, Beagle lost a faceoff. He couldn't get off, and the other team immediately scored. So I don't know. That's one of those Barry Trotz. You know, Barry Trotz, weird, not really thinking it out decisions that we'll have to live through for the rest of his tenure, which might be 10 games. So
that's coming. Okay, fine. Let's go to Michael's question, which is the next question. Michael asks, if Barry Trotz were a Game of Thrones character, very appropriate for a Sunday afternoon, would he be killed in season 1, episode 3, or would he manage to live until the 4th episode? Ian, what are your thoughts? Do you even watch Game of Thrones?
I do not, and I actually don't know any of the characters. I think that small guy is named Tyrone or something.
Yes, the small guy's name is Tyrone. No, it's Tyrion. So the good thing about not knowing the characters on Game of Thrones is that they die so frequently, it'll be all right. But I think what Michael and what you were pointing at is that Barry Trotz is on the last year of his contract, and the team will have a little bit of a different look this year. And I don't want to presage anything or make any predictions, but how tenable this situation is without either an extension or a coaching change announced is up for debate. I've got a pack of questions here that are all along the same topic. Dominic asks, when are we trading Ovi? And it's 12:35 in the afternoon now. I don't think it's happening today or in the next 3 or 4 years. But John asks, what do you think the Caps could get for Ovi? And that's an interesting point. Like, if you're saying, all right, let's assume that the Caps are going to trade him, you know, in defiance of his value, both as an on and off ice contributor and the captain of the team and blah, 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 blah. What could they get for him? And I have the hardest time gaming that out in my head. I don't know. What do you think?
I that was actually one of the most interesting questions I think we got, even though it's such a broad question that's been kind of, you know, dealt with before. You know, everybody asks, well, will the Capitals trade Ovi? What would the Capitals get back? You know, the first thing I think about is, well, how much cash would the Capitals cover on a deal like that? Because if you think about it, they're paying a premium on past years of Ovechkin's career, which is good. I mean, this is one of the best contracts Capitals have ever signed, in my opinion. Because imagine if Ovi became a free agent 5 years ago. I mean, it would have been a complete disaster. So, you know, even though
he would be
making
the league maximum kind of contract,
absolutely. So, you know, in a way, Ovi bet on himself, but he also kind of hurt himself by taking such a long deal. But, you know,
he's also got like a diminished ceiling, right, with that salary. But
yeah,
he'll really, from the last year on, he'll be earning in excess of his contributions to the team. And that's probably okay, given what he was able to contribute in the prior year. So,
yeah,
as much as we have decried it in the past, that contract has remained good longer than most people, including us, predicted.
Oh, absolutely.
And so, it really should be a feather in the cap of, you know, George McPhee, and really Taliansis, I think, was the one who pushed for the back half of that contract being so massive.
Yeah,
what would they get back from him? I don't know.
It could be. I would think that the Capitals would ask for at least a first round pick, at least.
And I would say a blue chip.
Yeah.
Like a top five pick.
And. I don't know if you can really control the picks too much. I think that it would be a first rounder. They would probably ask back a good young scorer that seems like he has promise, but isn't there yet. And then probably
like
another
Forsberg
player,
type maybe.
Yeah, something like that. I think you would have to. I think it would at least be a 3 or 4 person deal.
But see, I think you're right about that. Yeah.
And the problem is that. If the Capitals don't cover any of his salary, it would never work. And I don't think the Capitals are really interested in doing that because, if you look at this area, who's the guy who has helped build this area into such a hockey community? And it really is Ovi,
John Wall.
No. Okay. Though he did that awesome commercial with Wes Johnson.
So the interesting thing, though, what was I talking about? Oh, yeah. So, all the team that has the assets to deal to Ovi would not want Ovi, right? Like, what you described, that team probably won't be in the market for them unless they're in some weird cap situation. I don't see a real plausible case just because it's such a massive deal. But then again, these general managers have imaginations that. And creativity that I don't see. So maybe it could happen. There's some more questions along these lines, though.
Well, if we're really quick, Ovi, he would be a perfect guy for a team that's going for a Stanley Cup as a rental. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So he wouldn't be good to build around at all. So that's a great point.
Yeah. So this is my least favorite question, but I'm going to say it anyway. Matthew asks, do you guys think Ovi should shave off a few pounds down to 210? And if so, what benefit would this have on his game? I don't know what Ovi's weight is right now.
I think it's 240.
But that listing, I don't know if I believe that. Players vacillate. Should Ovi be faster and less physical? I think there's two things to consider that Ovi is extremely durable. He played pretty well, pretty decently through a significant injury, and his body mass and his ability to inflict suffering on other players and being able to, even if it isn't, doesn't lead to him scoring goals individually, his ability to level hits does help move the pace of the game and should not be not considered at all. And I think that maybe we sometimes conflate his weight with his age and that, if he returned to the weight he was when he was 22, he would score like he was 22. That ain't going to happen. I don't know. And I don't think I'm in a position to say that A, Ovi is too heavy now, or B, would be better if he were not heavy. I think it's plausible that he'd be worse if he were less heavy. I'm not willing to stick my head out there on this one.
I think that he could probably lose 10 pounds just because, I think he's around 240 probably right now. And if he can go down to 225, 230, I think that would help with his quickness just in general. But I agree with you. It's is that going to help him be a better player 5-on-5, which is where he kind of struggled last year and, quote unquote struggled. This guy's one of the greatest players of all time. But
with the goal differential in the 60% range, he still did fine overall. It's just that we expect more.
Yeah, and so I think anywhere where he wants to improve, he needs to focus on 5-on-5 scoring, and that's up to him and the Capitals about how they think they could do it. I know Brian McClellan said at the end of the year when he kind of threw Ovi under the bus that he could lose some weight. So I'm kind of in agreement. I think quickness always helps in this league, but Ovi isn't really that dainty scorer like he used to be. So
I also don't think that quickness and weight are like a single spectrum though. There are, you can be very large and have your, what is it? The twitch reflex, you can have explosive speed. Like, those things are not, you know, like, you can carry more ATP with more body mass. Like, I don't buy it being lighter is faster. We're not playing the effing NES hockey game where the small guys are fast and the big guys are slow. It doesn't have to be like that. I mean, there's still, like, the example of freaking Hal Gill. So I'm not saying it's – I'm just saying the correlation is not absolute.
How many pounds should Brooks Orpik lose?
None. He is a perfect specimen physically. We're going to get to Brooks Orpik in a minute. Cranberry Tea, which I don't think is your own name, just to be straight up. Are any of you confident that Ovi will score 40 goals again in a regular season? He definitely could.
Yeah.
It's less and less likely. I think he underscored this season based on his opportunities. Like, I think he could have had more individual goals. He did a little bit of sharing of them, which is good for the team and hurts his overall stats and probably hurt him a little bit in the award season. But he could hit 40 goals again, easy.
I'm going to let analyst Evgeny Kuznetsov be my answer. He's scoring 50 this year.
God, no, is he not? And you did this routine like 2 years ago when Ovi like came out of the gate super hot. I'm like, come on, man, he's shooting like 30. Anyway, final question in this group here. Chris Hagen says, is it realistic to have a different captain other than Ovi? Realistic is a great way to put it. So no. Consider, it is not realistic to have a captain other than Ovi. Here's why. One situation would be to trade Ovi, which, as we just discussed, is unlikely because of how massive a deal it would be and how unlikely it is to find a trading partner. And then two is the idea that only comes up among passionate people on social media after a big loss on sports talk radio or among a metropolitan area newspaper columnist who's desperate for content. You need to strip the C off Ovi's chest. That is one of the easiest ways to destroy the relationship between a player and a team. The only example I can think of it happening in the last billion years was with the Sharks, right? Didn't they do that with – who did they do with? Marlowe? Who was the captain back there that they stripped the C off of?
Oh, I don't remember. I'm going to say – yeah, I guess it was Marlowe, I think.
Well, I'm Googling it, and yes, it was Joe Thornton. They stripped Joe Thornton of the captaincy? That's crazy. Joe Thornton is a
– that massive responsibility, Peter – that he was holding on his shoulders.
Oh my God.
That's
a horrible thing. I'm mad at the Sharks now. Let's move on.
That's on your Wikipedia page forever.
Yeah, really? God damn, what a horrible thing to do. That was 3 years ago. I thought it was Patrick Marleau, so what do I know?
You know, everybody always wanted to make Brooks like the captain in Washington, and that's... You know, some of the things I've heard about his tenure in Washington now, I'm just like, oh, man, people just have no idea. So, I don't know.
Nobody knows nothing, man, including us sometimes. I was like, yeah, I could totally see him giving to Brooks like. And then on the hindsight, I'm like, man, am I glad they dodged that. Anyway. All right. This is I'm gonna take a pass on this one and just really tee it up for you, Ian. You ready? Here we go.
Yeah.
Julian Patrick asks, is Braun Strowman the greatest human to have ever lived, and how many belts will he win at SummerSlam?
All of them, and I don't know if greatest human is a good description for him. Maybe the most scariest human. Peter, he put Roman Reigns on a stretcher and then threw him off I don't even know how to describe it. It's where, like, those truck unloading areas are. Obviously, Roman Reigns was not actually Roman Reigns. It was like a stuffed animal human because they cut. And then you see him throw, quote unquote, Roman Reigns off this, like, again, I don't, landing, I guess. And it just, like, flies over. And you can kind of tell it's fake.
This is, like, of the caliber of the Vince McMahon exploding limo.
Yeah, they're kind of getting back into that, which is awesome. Like, it's a little bit more realistic, like how... Also, Braun Strowman, when Roman Reigns was in an ambulance, he pushed over the ambulance. But it's clear they had, like, a tow truck behind it and was, like, pulling it slowly. So, it's so funny.
Oh, though. That's good. That's good.
But that's the best wrestling, when you have to, like, when you know it's totally, totally not happening, but it's just the fact that they love a character so much that they're doing this. That's also the reason why I actually think he'll win, what is it, the Fatal 4-Way against... Lesnar at SummerSlam. I think he'll win. So, Julian Patrick, great question.
Julian Patrick, that was a horrible question. Let's move on to Brendan's question. There's some stuff here about the next season and some younger players. So Brendan asks, which young D-man do you see making the team? I talked about with Kyle Mace about this, of Chicago Hockey. Ian, what's your take?
I think Lucas Johansson will get a look. I'm not sure he'll play 10 games, but I think he'll get a look. Just because, and I'll have some more stuff on him because I actually had a long interview with him that I haven't completely transcribed yet during development camp. But he looks really, really good. And, you know, I don't want to – I think Christian Jews has really earned his potential call-up or roster spot. But in training camp, like we've learned the last couple years here with Liam O'Brien randomly making the team during the Oates era, and our boy Zach Sanford making the team last year out of training camp, which were completely random, it can be anybody. And they really do look at guys sometimes by how they play in training camp and just give them that spot. So it really could be any of the young guys. And, you know, I think the defense is not going to be a strength, but I don't think it's going to be for the two guys they end up bringing up. I actually think Jonas Singenthaler would be the best to plop into the lineup right now. Seeing him play for the Swiss team during the World Junior Championship, he is really good. And he's already playing with old men over in Europe. So I think he's really the guy to look at as being the guy who could kind of make it out of nowhere next year, along with Jews. And I think they really, really like Lucas Johansson. So I think those three are the big ones. And if it's a real mess, they'll just go through the others.
What's your – so you're cooler on Madison Bowie?
So from what I've seen, you know, last year he kind of had a really tough year with his Instagram injury. Usage and how he got injured. And the thing that I've noticed from the way he plays is that he still needs to develop his game defensively. Now, that's a really broad term, but – what happened with Madison was that when he played in junior, he was such a good skater, is that a lot of times that kind of hid any things that he had to work on defensively in terms of like, you know, forechecking along the glass to get the puck out. And so I think with him, he still needs some seasoning, and I'm unsure he would make it, but he's a very, very good skater, and a lot of times that can get you out of it. But I think Jonas Siegenthaler is even faster and more shifty, so... I don't know. I'm not as high on him.
I have this. I'm still sort of rolling it over, but I read an interesting paper by Ryan Stimson a few weeks back from Hockey Graphs, and I feel like the Capitals, they will never do this, but they have this opportunity to do some pretty drastic stuff in how they organize their lineups that may make them less dependent on traditional defense. I'm not sure what form this will take, but I want to write about it soon. Barry Trotz is the absolute wrong coach for this, and I don't think any major league team is going to do this soon. But running four forwards, one D, seems to be a combination of opportunity and circumstance that could be interesting. And it'll never happen, but it would be neat if it did. Mike Rossi asked a similar question, but he did also add that Nathan Wolka could be potentially tapped to fill in Winnick's shoes. What do you think about Nathan Wolka's chance at making the big club this year?
I think he's 100% going to make the team. And
boom!
Again, watching him last year, he was probably okay. So he's really, really tiny. He's as tiny as Christian Jews, but he's got this weird, and okay, I'm not comparing him to Martin St. Louis, but Martin St. Louis had this thing where people would try to take him out and they'd get blown up. And I think Nathan Walker has this unbelievable center of gravity, and he is so strong in his legs. Last year, okay, I saw him score like four goals where he would be in front of the net, a 6'4", 6'5" guy in the AHL would be trying to clear him out of the crease, and Walker would just knock the guy over. I don't know. This guy is...
He's got legs like Redwood.
Yeah, he is a wrecking ball. I know that his favorite player growing up was Martin St. Louis. And, okay, again, I don't think he's going to be as offensive ever as that guy. But I do think that as a fourth liner, I think there could be a span of 1 to 3 years, 1 to 5 years, where this guy is in the NHL and he's a back liner, but he is just so scrappy. Everyone's going to love him, and I don't see any way he's not going to make the team. He's already better than – who's that other guy they signed who has three names?
Devontae Smith-Pelly?
Yeah, he's already way better than him. I mean, almost everyone in Hershey is better than Devontae. I don't even understand why they signed him.
I'll never understand that. That is one of the most confusing moves of the offseason.
Like, McClellan makes a lot of great moves, but like that one was, you just look at it, he's like, oh.
Easily one of the worst 5-on-5 players, like definitely bottom 5 percentile. It is baffling, that one. Let's move on. Julie asks, listening to Jill and Tark's podcast earlier this week, that's our friends at CSN, I get a little excited for training camp and the Hershey guys duking it out for a spot. Am I wrong to be excited by this? Abso-freaking-lutely not. Whatever the circumstances are for the Caps, I think this is the most interesting thing happening with the team right now, right? How are they going to fill out this roster? For the next 2 months, 3 months, that's the drama, and it's going to be great.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this is kind of probably something they should have been doing 3 years ago, and the team might have actually won Stanley Cups if, instead of some of these older veterans that they've signed or some of these older
guys.
Jeez,
who are you talking about, Ian?
I don't know who I could be talking about, but I agree with Brian McClellan that defense – for now, I mean, beyond these top 4 or 5 guys, it is a strength. But, you know, I think that's going to be fun, but it's almost a little bit too late to be doing this, which kind of frustrates me, is that if they would have integrated some of these guys earlier, if they would have given some people more opportunity, talking about Burakovsky, Verana in the past, I think that those kind of things could have helped them. So, you know that a Brooks Orpik is a liability in the playoffs. So why aren't you trying to get one of these guys ready?
Answer that question later. That's a question later, Ian.
Sorry.
All right, moving on. Michelle asks, I believe Sasha Minor, I believe you're talking about Alex Semin, is the only person to receive a penalty for tucking his jersey a few years ago and was sent to have a seat in the box. This is something we need to look up. The readers know the stories better than we do. The rule seems to no longer be enforced. Any thoughts on why Mr. Enigma was singled out or for the rule? I think the answer is obvious. It's Alex Semin. He's been on, when he was in the league, he was on watch lists. People hated his guts. I will never understand it. That baby boy hung the stars, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, two things about this. One, he has a private Instagram account, and he let me follow him. And I have no idea why, but it is the greatest gift anyone has ever given me in life. Two, I don't understand why he's so hated. And I would love to talk about this with him when he retires from hockey. Is like, what did he do? I know that Crosby interview, I think, completely sabotaged his career. But like, when me and Igor went to camp or went to practice one day, Igor talked to him 3 times. Every time, Igor was like, this is one of the funnest guys I've ever interviewed in my life. Like, he's honest, but, like, he's very smart. And, I think he just distrusted a lot of people. And I think that Crosby interview kind of made him become weird about everything. But, like, I really feel like he was one of the best players, you know, that we've ever seen play hockey. And, you know, we just still hate on him, you know?
I totally agree, yeah. There's this sort of normalization of there's some kind of invisible force that makes hockey players act a certain way, and if you don't act that way, people look at you suspiciously.
Yeah,
and that applies to a bunch of players that are just sort of loved everywhere among the outside the hockey orthodoxy, like Phil Kessel and also Alex Semin. Like, those are two players that are divisive, but you can't argue that they're excellent players and compelling hockey personalities. And I'll add to that a third one, PK Subban.
Oh, yeah, that's a great point. You know what? And I think Semin is more close to Kessel. That's a great comparison. I actually think those two are very similar. Like, very dogged and in their way of thinking and emotional.
Like hot dogs.
Yeah. But
okay.
Sometimes it takes effort from the media, the team, the player, for people to fix those issues. And when that doesn't happen, I think you just are left with this narrative where Pierre Maguire is talking about how people hate Alex Semin you know, and it just turns into disaster.
And so. Don Cherry, and even players and former players in the organization, analysts, they all just say, like, he's a weird dude. He's not a hockey player. He's just a guy that plays hockey. Let's move on. This one's from Margaret. And I took the liberty of filling this one out ahead of time. So you can just take a breather on this one here. Pair each capital with a superhero and give a little reason why each one was chosen. Margaret, this is my question. Let's do this thing. Nick Backstrom, he's Cyclops. On the surface, he's virtuously dull, but underneath, there's some really dark stuff happening there. Jay Beagle, he's Doctor Strange. He taps into mystical forces and is probably pretty skeptical of modern technology. Andrew Burakovsky's Miss Marvel, he just has unlimited potential and a winning attitude. John Carlson is Superman. Lots of people are really into him, but I don't really get it. And the last few outings have been pretty so-so. I don't know about those movies, you guys. Taylor Chorney, he's Aquaman. That's obvious. Although I may have to revise that one when everyone falls in love with the Aquaman from Justice League. Brett Connolly is Franklin Richards. Ian Franklin Richards is obviously he is.
I don't know.
He's the son of the Invisible Woman in Mr. Fantastic. He's extremely powerful, but you only really use him when it's necessary for the plot. Lars Eller is Cypher. Obviously, Ian, Cypher is...
Does he have one eye? I don't know.
No. He was one of the New Mutants. Doug Ramsey, I think, is his real name. He speaks different languages, and he's just a really sweet dude who makes everybody better. But he died. Philip Grubauer is either... You can choose, depending on what your fandom is. He's either Groot from Guardians of the Galaxy. Do you get that reference, Ian?
Yes, I am Groot.
There you go. Or Strix. Which is to say that he's a sweet dude. Strix is from the Order of the Talon. She's an owl from Secret Six, which is my favorite Gail Simone book. A sweet, sweet person, but I don't understand what he's saying usually. Brayden Holtby is obviously Beast. That one's easy. He's a powerhouse both intellectually and physically. Evgeny Kuznetsov is Spider-Man because we're really banking on him being as good as it's promised to be. Matt Niskanen, he is Iron Man because he is indispensable. It's like he's everywhere. He also used to do bad things. In Iron Man's case, he was an arms dealer. In Matt Niskanen's case, he was a penguin. But now he's a good guy. Dmitry Orlov is Vision. He's capable of doing very good and very bad things. Brooks Orpik is Old Man Logan. That one.
No. I get that one.
TJ Oshie is Kitty Pryde, universally beloved and comes up big in the big moments. Alex Ovechkin is Spawn. He used to be a really big deal, and I hear there's a reboot coming. Zing! And Tom Wilson is Luke Cage. I get it. You're tough. Now what else? All right. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the question, Margaret. That was my favorite. All right. Zach Johnson. I like this one here. I've been reminiscing about the bad old days, not that I've been following for all that long, but trying to keep perspective on where we are at now by remembering Caps during wartime, Top Line Beagle, the Adam Oates song, Hey, It's Ovi from Hockey. What are y'all's favorite RMNB highlights from the days before everyone got mad about back-to-back President's Trophies? in the spirit of, it's going to be fun no matter what. This is a tough one. I didn't try to think about this too much ahead of time. One thing that always comes up to me is I really enjoy the interactions we have with Caps fans and readers during really bad games or late night games when things get a little weird. When we can sort of drop all of the decorum of pretending that we're serious hockey writers, and it's just like, God, that was awful. I remember a game that was so bad that my entire coverage of it was pictures of dogs. And whenever there's late games, usually people send us photos of their pet sleeping while they're still awake, which cracks me up. I don't know. What are some of the fun no matter what memories of you for you, Ian?
I think we really kind of – there were two posts that I remember way back in the day that people loved that gave me confidence about what I wanted the site to be and who we were as authors and creators was I think it was the Sasha Bar graph. Do you remember those?
Oh yeah, that was a great one.
That was and that was completely me and you collaborating on that. And I just remember that turned out so good. I mean, it could be even better now. If you're a good creator, you always look back at old things you do and you're like, that wasn't really as good as I thought it was.
That was the one where we kicked it up. We did one, and so I've got it up here. So it's the Sasha Cares bar graph, and at the top it's Sasha Care, and at the bottom it's Sasha Don't Care. So win Stanley Cup, Sasha Care. Win Olympics, not so much. Matt Bradley doesn't care at all. Mark Stahl, was Mark Stahl the guy he fought bongo style? Was that what that was? Okay, great. Very doesn't care very much at all. Alex Ovechkin, off the chart. Practice almost below the chart. Burger King, pretty high up on the chart. And then we're like, oh, that was great. That was great. And then we're like, ah, screw it, let's do another one. And so we just right below that in the same post, we have another one of riding in golf cart cares a lot. NHL rulebook doesn't care at all. Stretch pass cares a lot. Rosetta Stone, i.e. like learning other languages, cares very little. Decoupage, which I don't remember what decoupage is. A whole bunch. Game before resigning, a whole bunch. Game after resigning, not very much at all. That was fun. That was good.
But so the other one was when we did, I think it was George McPhee's Facebook page, where we walked him through the trade deadline. And
oh my God.
I did that with Anna, and that was one of the most fun things. It took me 10 hours to do.
Yeah,
to like
that was this
ridiculous. Gigantic graphic, but it was so worth it. It was so funny. Like, even to the day you look at it, you're like, oh my God. But that kind of, you know, I wasn't necessarily as strong as a writer as I am now back in the day. And when I had help doing these posts with people who are actually good at writing and actually really, really smart, a lot of times I could use my skills of creating good content with other people, and just some of the stuff we did together, because people really believed in the site, it just turned into such great, fun content. I think the Oats, you know, the Oats song that you did, where, you know, we have Bulimos as a thing, but then you turn it into the, like, it was the perfect moment. You know, the
did
article
you pronounce it Bulimos?
Yeah. Bulimos? I don't know. I'm
Bulimos.
Sorry.
We've got a couple of Spanish speaking people in Frederick too.
Sorry.
Do you ever go to a fast casual dining restaurant that serves Mexican fare and try to order in Spanish?
No, I don't.
Don't. It is the most white boy thing you can do. And then you're like, got it. And then you're you think you're running, and all of a sudden you're like, crap, what's the word for lettuce? I think it's lechuga, but I never do it.
I just remember when I worked at Roy Rogers, we had a dishwasher and two people who did dishes that were Mexican, and they had come over to make money and then go back home to their family. They couldn't have a life in Mexico because they couldn't make that much money. But when they came to America, you know, the small pittance that you would make at Roy Rogers actually was like a ton of money in Mexico, which I really admired. So I remember, though, that my nickname for them, and it was, and I inspired and took this on, was Gringo. So they would always call me Gringo all the time.
That's great.
And you
really do capture the nature of Gringo, Ian.
Yeah.
This George McPhee post is so freaking golden, by the way. God, that was good. The joke density is so high. Anna was great, man.
Yeah, I miss her.
Yeah. That was a good post. All right. And a great question from Zach. Thank you. All right. More directly about hockey from Sam. My other question is, future NHL lockout coming in a few years? Seems to be. It's going to happen. That's why so many players are doing big deals right now. I personally believe that a lockout is inevitable. I believe that there's going to be continued negotiation about hockey related revenue. I think as owners want to move, want to own more of their broadcast rights, and move like over the top, like direct to consumer work. I think that there's going to be a big change, and we see a lot of the bigger contracts now be so loaded up with bonuses that are buyout proof or lockout proof that I think everyone's sort of banking on it and assuming it now. I think that a lot of the drama, a lot of the conflict we see about the Olympics is sort of like manufactured to start positioning and getting leverage for negotiations for the next CBA and the lockout that will come with it.
Yeah, how dumb is that, too, to use the Olympics as a negotiating ploy? It's really inconceivable.
I would consider it more dumb if it weren't completely typical of the Gary Bettman-led NHL.
I actually think
shoot themselves in the foot at every opportunity.
I mean, it's going to be interesting. The few players that I talk to, they always complain about, and I forget what it's called, but where they have to pay in that pool of money.
Escrow.
Yeah, they everybody hates the escrow. So mm-hmm. I think a lot of people point at the Olympics and other issues as problems, but I think escrow is something that, you know, players just don't get a lot of their actual contracts. I mean, that's weird to even think about. But, you know, a lot of guys with, if you think about taxes in America plus the escrow plus the agent, a lot of guys are just getting half of their contracts. So I think that's a big part of it. And I don't know what to think because I know Bettman doesn't necessarily. This is going to sound weird, but I just don't think the NHL wants to have another lockout because I think that's really going to hurt them. I mean, in the past, it was kind of understandable because the sport was at a level where, it really actually needed to kind of, you needed to actually have these fights to kind of make it a little bit more friendly to the owners. But now, I mean, they're making so much money. You know, I can't imagine them sabotaging themselves again over issues that don't seem that great. You know what I mean?
I can really imagine it. I don't think the Olympics are a sincere issue. I think that's a position to negotiate. That like you can pick about a fight about something that you don't actually care about because when you concede, then you get credit for it. That said, I would be 0% surprised if they go to another lockout. The thing about escrow is it's deferred payment. So it's not like they lose that money, but they lose the cash flow in the short term, which is a big deal. You know, if you're trying to go from being a person who was earning whatever in the AHL and you now all of a sudden have an NHL contract, but most of that NHL contract is not reaching you in cash. So you can't really get like credit for the big house you want to buy in Arlington or whatever. It's complicated. There's two questions now that have fallen along these lines, and maybe we'll get to it a little bit later. But I generally think that the union, the Players Association, is weak as hell in the NHL.
Yeah.
The trouble that we see is the result of that, and the league really inflicting their own suffering. I mean, I understood that they couldn't getting a salary cap was a major win for the association and for the league, and a really demoralizing defeat for the Players Association, but it might have been necessary for the health of the league.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I don't have a whole lot of sympathy for the owners. But Gary Bettman will do what they said, what the owners tell him to do.
And one last thing is, I think the one thing to watch is how the NHLPA is going to position themselves over the next few years, because there was a long article, I forget who wrote it, but it just kind of detailed all the drama that's happening with the NHLPA with a slice of players and the management there. So I think there might be a lot of changes to that, because I think a lot of the players are so unhappy with the deal they signed that mm-hmm. there might be changes ahead of time. So I think that's going to really play out slowly, but I hope the league isn't this stupid, and I hope the players aren't this stupid to hurt all the momentum that they've gained, because over the last, you know, they have somehow had all this momentum despite the fact that they have horrible coverage on NBC, you know, and all these other issues with the league that we talk about frequently. But the league is in such a great place. I mean, you look at the Capitals, where this really wasn't a great market for hockey 10, 20 years ago. Let's say 20 years ago. And now that's been built into a routine sellout, you know? So, and I do believe that it's actually a routine sellout. I do think that people are looking for tickets and really love this team this much. I don't think that's manufactured. So I hope that they don't sabotage that, because, hockey's always going to probably be a little bit of a fringe sport in America, and they need to do everything they can to keep it afloat, you know, possibly.
Yeah.
And roll.
Well put. Next question's from Sean. Sean asked a question also about stupidity. Why are the Orioles so dumb? Ian, go.
You knew that they were going to get in this situation eventually where nothing would work, and signing all these veterans to long deals was going to bite them in the butt because they had no young players coming up.
Worst development, worst farm in the majors.
And it caught up to them. So I don't know if they're dumb. I think everyone knew that this was the problem, but they kind of exasperated it by not developing. You know, they haven't really fixed that problem. They trade away young players. They destroy young players who they call up. So I don't know. They just need to rebuild.
If Angelos were really into it, they would have paid Miller. If Duquette were, and this is so weird to say because I was really anti McPhail, but McPhail put together the successful elements of this team,
Yeah.
Like, you know, Scope is like their only victory of call ups. And got Manny. Letting Arrieta go letting Arrieta go will haunt Duquette forever. And then it even goes all down to Buck with really icing Kim. I don't really understand the deal there, but I'm actually at this point happy that Kim's going to get an opportunity to play some meaningful baseball, even if it's in Philadelphia. I don't know. It's bad, but
then they're not aggressive on the international market, and it's just I don't know what they're doing.
Woof. Okay, fun times with the Orioles. Kelsey, so there's a bunch of negative questions in a row. We'll get out of this pretty soon. Kelsey says, why is Orpik still on the team? He's good, just not 6 million good. I actually have a really simple answer to this. Orpik's on the team because his contract was signed by the current general manager. if George McPhee signed Orpik as his last action before McClellan took over, McClellan would have bought him out by now. But general managers don't buy out their own contracts.
That's a great point. Yeah, I've been trying to tell myself that because the team is so crazy about this contract, is that he's actually a player coach, and that $4 million of the money is to pay him to be head coach, and the other $2 million that's how much he's actually worth as a player.
There you go.
I don't know, like. I don't even know what to say about it. Like, we've been through it before. I feel like he's the anchor that sinks the team in the playoffs each year. And I feel like him and Alsner, did their part again this year. I don't know. If they actually are trying to win, I don't know why he's on the team. And
Yeah, you're right, man.
I mean,
Go ahead.
It's so mean to even say that, but because he's the nicest guy in the world. He really is the nicest guy in the world. But
yeah, we have to, like, I hate that we have to do this caveat every single time, but. We like the players.
Yeah,
we just don't like the contracts and the circumstances. Like, Bruce Orpik's a great dude, and the Caps should absolutely pay him $125,000 a year to be an off-the-ice mentor. I said it to just don't pay him $6 million and have him pay. He's going to have to play 19 minutes a night this year. unless the Caps hit some sort of perfecta on all of their blue line prospects turning out, Orpik's gonna have a promotion in his age 36 year. That's nuts.
That's gonna be the part that could sink the team next year, is how do they handle Orpik with a guy who can't really cover for him. And
God, isn't that gonna be fascinating to see what happens? Who's your partner?
It could end up good. You never know. It could end up good.
You're right. It could.
But
it's less likely to.
No. If you put him with Juice, I just seems like a disaster waiting to happen.
I want to point, if you're listening to this, do find Pat's articles citing Sean Tierney's research about zone entries and zone exits. It was pretty interesting and does really paint some of Brooks Orpik's virtues. Moving on. Question from Megan. Would it help to do some kind of ritual cleansing at Verizon and or Kettler? I am not a faithful or a spiritual person, but I believe in rituals, and it can't help. I recommend like a good steam clean of the carpets, always good. Baking soda is your friend. Every once in a while I find like vinegar is helpful. I know it's a little bit of a strong odor, but it can really help neutralize. That said, I don't think that there's any kind of curse on the team. I think that they're just pretty unlucky. And have made some coaching and roster mistakes at times. The end. That's all I've got. You got thought about ritual cleansing?
I don't even know. I just, whoever wrote, you better get past the second round this year on the boards, I hope he does that every year.
Yes. Second question from Megan. Do you have any inside joke emojis? Yeah, but I'm not going to explain them. They're all really dirty.
You really should.
There's one about the nose emoji that we're not going to get into. No, we're done. Question from Dakota. This is a good short, fast one, although I may pronounce the name wrong. Matthews or Line? Did I say it right?
To me, I always thought it was Lane.
Yeah, well, that's because that's how it's spelled. I think that Matthews is the better player, but Line is the more exciting offensive force. I was talking earlier this year about, like, somebody said, like, oh, is Ovi going to hit 50 goals? Oh, that was me reacting to that Kuznetsov thing. I was like, there's no way in hell that Ovi's going to hit 50 goals. In fact, it's really likely that no one will do it. But if anyone does, Matthews and Laine and, like, maybe, like, Tarasenko. No, not even Tarasenko. Like, those two guys are the ones that are most likely to do it. And it's plausible that Laine could do it. But I don't know. Do you have a thought? Do you like – also, Laine's on a pretty bad team.
I think Austin Matthews is psychotically good. And by psychotically is – There has to be something wrong with him for him to be that dead inside, you know? He's just an assassin out there. Now, I think he's just going to be that next generational player. I mean, Laine might be the Malkin to his Ovechkin. So I think Laine may, you know, or maybe Laine is the Ovechkin to Matthews Crosby. How about that? That works. Yeah. That works. Where Laine might end up becoming the better goal scorer and the better, you know, he might put up more points, but Matthews is the winner. You know what I mean? I think Toronto is looking down a dynasty potentially. I just their team is so good, and there's just something about him that he just, you know, I love the guys who are really good and you can't really explain it. Like even with Crosby, you know, he goes to the net hard, but you can't really explain it. He just is really good, you know? And yeah. I think Austin Matthews is in that same vein.
Fair enough. I completely agree. Emily asks, will TJ Oshie score 30 goals again this year? Ian, nope. Do you want to field this one?
He's not.
Okay. Next question. Which Pixar movie should get a sequel?
Wall-E.
I completely agree. Wall-E. Damn, that was good. We agree on something. That's wonderful. Kurt asks, who's hotter, Holtby or Wilson? I think it's Holtby in a walk.
Whoa. No, it's definitely Tom Wilson. Have you seen those abs?
No, see. Yeah, no, the abs are great. Like, but like, it's really, it's like, what's his name? It's like Jason Priestley and Dylan from 90210.
Yeah, it is 100%.
Like Wilson's got like that pretty boy Jason Priestley look to him and like the piercing eyes, but Holtby's got, you know, he's a little rougher, you know, he's got, there's some darkness up in his head and he's always fighting that when he's in net. Like Dylan, he's the bad, like Holt, really, Wilson's got the bad boy rep, but Holtby's the true bad boy emotionally.
I feel like, I feel like, you know, everybody's like, your mom would be like, you should marry Brayton Holtby. But deep down inside, you really just want to date Tom Wilson. You know what I mean? I feel like that's why Tom Wilson is quote unquote hotter.
Strong disagree, but whatever. Next question is, I'll tell you what. Have you seen this next question? It's about a player that I don't know who it is. No. You know who it is either?
Wait. Danny's Cerebro. Yeah, I know of him.
Okay.
He's the guy who got banned for juicing.
Well, then, no, I don't think that person should join the Capitals, Jesse. Jesse, what's with your question?
He's a really good player. I know of him from the World Championship. I've seen him play. I mean, he's friends with Orlov and Kuznetsov, and he's a good player, but that's really risky.
36 years old, though.
A 36-year-old KHL player who's juicing. I mean, I would rather play anyone else in the capital system than him.
Devontae, you know? Smith-Pelly over that dude.
Put him on defense. I'd rather have him. You know, because at least you know what you're going to get, and it's going to be bad. So,
next question is from John. Do you think I'm the coolest Caps fan from South Dakota? Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because I don't know any good other question. Fans from South Dakota.
I've been to South Dakota a few times for work, and I have not found a Caps fan there yet.
Wait, John. Who was? No, I think I just thought of somebody.
Who?
They used to do that Caps blog, and then they moved.
That's everyone.
No.
Everyone used to have a Caps blog, and they've all moved.
Dave?
I don't know which. Oh, no. Dave's not in South Dakota.
Where is he at?
Dave Nichols. I think they're in, like, Colorado somewhere.
No. I think they're. Because where did Brooks Like have his wedding? That's where they live.
I thought it was Idaho.
Was it?
I'm looking it up real quick. So Dave and Cheryl,
we need to give John an honest answer.
All right. So Dave is, they're in Idaho.
Okay. Therefore, so John, you are the coolest Caps fan from South Dakota.
your prize is in the mail. Nathan, not one of our Nathans, asks, does the current salary cap issue finally give guys in Hershey a chance to develop into full-time pros? And does the potential surge in youth development actually help the Caps in the long run? We kind of answered this before, and I think you sort of said it best that, it's going to help the team as those players develop and get opportunities. Obviously, they're not going to have that high-end talent that they've had as they had those like free agents who were a little bit older. But it's a fresh start for the Capitals in a lot of ways, which perhaps isn't what they want. You know, they want to continue their current cup window, but I don't know. I think it's exciting.
Yeah, I think it could help them. It seems like the team, you know, again, they didn't really trust in a lot of their young players. They would have too many veterans, and it kind of blocked a bunch of guys who actually were ready to step in. And you know, a lot of times creativity and quickness and things of that nature really can put a team over the top. I always remember that year where the Bruins called up Tyler Seguin that first year, and they just went so deep in the playoffs, and he became this dominant player then. So I always think that, you know, I really do think that young players can have a big impact. I mean, look at the Penguins in their last couple of years. But I don't think the Capitals situation is going to be the same. I don't think Barry Trotz is, you know, this is a little bit of a narrative, but I believe in that narrative, that Barry Trotz is not really a good coach with young players. And I also just don't think, you know, it's just like they're kind of throwing everybody into the fire right now, which is not usually a great situation. And you have an embattled coach who in the past has thrown his young players under the bus, like Dmitry Orlov, when things have gone wrong. So I'm not sure it's a great situation. And then in the first month of the season, you know, I think like 8 of their first 12 games are on the road, and things could get really bad really quick in that first month. And maybe by the end of the year, things are a lot better. But I think that's going to be the biggest question is Trotz, the young players, and how this team starts. And you know, there's a lot of reason for this team not to do good in that first month. So
it's going to be so like I said, like this period to the roster being established for opening night, and then opening night to Thanksgiving are going to be two really important epochs for this team.
Yeah,
for their short, medium, and long term fortunes. It's an interesting time to be a Caps fan. Next question's from
Trotz is like attached to the team by a thread, so that'll be interesting too.
Next question is from Jeff. Jeff says, what's the story with Chorney? I think that he was just going for the rhyme, right? Was he just going for the rhyme? I didn't say it out loud until just now. Anyway, the story with Chorney is that he's not really up to snuff as a full-time NHL defenseman. Good story, Pete. All right, we've got a four-pack here. Dennis asks, how will the Caps perform next year and where they'll be in the standings? Rob asks, great season ahead or nah? And Samantha asked, what expectations do you have heading into the season?
For me, I think they'll finish like fifth or so in the Eastern Conference. I think they'll be good. I think they'll have struggles. I think there's probably going to be, like I said, I think there might be a reckoning in the first month or two. And then whatever happens from that, they'll stabilize. I think it's going to be, you know, there's no reason in a lot of ways that they couldn't be near the top of the Metro this year, but there's also, you know, there are a lot of issues with this team that could catch up with them, you know, mentally too, you know? So I could see things going either way, but I think like fifth or fourth in the East, like that seems to make sense to me. How about you, Peter?
I will say fourth. I like your position on it. I think that there are some upstarts, especially Toronto, that'll make the East really different. Complexively, is that a word?
Complexively?
Sure.
No,
like the complexion of it will be different. I think Columbus and Montreal are probably going to see some regression, but I think that Toronto and Carolina are going to be a lot better than they were last year. Yeah. I think Ottawa's moments probably passed, but Pittsburgh's going to be probably just as good as they were last year, which is the kind of scary thing. But yeah, I would say give me fourth place. And it's going to be well worth watching, but it's going to be weird if the Capitals are fighting with the Hurricanes for a playoff spot in March. That's going to be weird. Haven't had that since the Oats year where they missed the playoffs.
A likely Justin Williams captained Hurricanes team.
I think the Canes are doing some really interesting stuff. I believe that Scott Darling has like a potential to make a good showing in goal for them. I'm excited for the Canes this year. And both of our friends, we have, I think, a grand total of two friends that are Canes fans. All right. Question from Kurt related to that. Make a halfway compelling argument as to why we can honestly hope to get past the second round this year. So I can totally do this. So we just said that they're going to have they're going to make the playoffs, but, you know, they're going to be fighting for it. But once you make the playoffs, bad teams make the conference finals pretty often. And the Capitals have this backlog of luck that they're just owed. Mm-hmm. They're going to get it. It's going to happen. So once you make the playoffs, anything can happen. And yeah. if your players are healthy, somewhat rested, which I think is an underappreciated phenomenon, really players play too much, the adjustments, the tactics, and lineup decisions are astute, better than they have been in the past, I think that the Capitals could easily take it. I mean, they've been a whisker away from making the third round five times in the last decade.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's no expectations anymore. Everybody kind of assumes they're going to struggle. So this will be the F it Capitals. You know what I mean? So who knows what's going to happen? Yes, squeak into the playoffs. Ovi's mad. You know,
yeah, you know, whatever. Let's see what happens.
Jay Beagle's going to score 12 goals in the playoffs. It's not going to make any sense. You know, I'm ready for it. Yeah. My body is ready.
Trey asks, communism?
I'm a no on that. How about you?
It depends on what we're talking about. It if we're talking about Bolshevism or like the sort of like Stalin-esque model, I'm a hard no. I'm a hard pass on that, but I don't think that's truly representative of the ideals of Marx and Engels. And I'd be happy to discuss the appropriateness of social non-capitalist structures even in a capitalist free enterprise-based society. I think that's important.
Wow.
We all deal with that in the mail, and we're all seemingly pretty cool with the mail. Anyway, Randy Pullman. Well, let's talk about Devontae Smith-Pelly some more then. Percentage-wise, how much over-coverage of DSP will there be? Oh, percentage-wise. I think in this podcast alone, it's like 85% over-coverage. We did not need to talk about Devontae Smith-Pelly this much.
Why did they...
All right.
Okay, yeah, we're done.
Go ahead.
No, I'm saying, why did they say that he's a lock to make the team?
I don't know.
I worry about their player evaluators. Like,
I also worry about that. all right, it is. We have exited the real hockey questions. Now it's just this is the speed round. I've got a back to back one from a reader named Steve. I think he plays drums in a rock band. question one: is a hot dog a sandwich? Answer that first. Hot dog sandwich. Ian, go.
I mean, yes, 100%. It's in a bun.
By that logic,
it's a sandwich.
By that logic, is cereal a soup?
That no.
That's inconsistent as hell. A hot dog is not a sandwich, and a cereal is not a soup. But chili is a soup because all stews are soups. Steve also asked, man, he is just all right. Steve had some free time last night. Would you rather fight? Just play some drums, man. Get me that. I want that new record. Would you rather fight 1,000 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck? There's a clear answer to this one. There really is.
I feel like the horses are hard workers, so I don't want the horses. I want the duck.
I will take on the 1,000 duck-sized horses.
Wait, why?
I think I could take, with one big kick, I could take out five or six. And then if I pace myself, I could think I could work through the whole group.
See,
think, 20, 25 minutes.
You walked your dogs around Baker Park all the time. You've seen mallard ducks.
Those are...
They're humongous. They're actually pretty big. You know, they're like 2 or 3 feet tall. So
they got hollow bones.
Imagine a strong horse running full like steam ahead at you, and then 1,000 of them. That would terrify me. I've had ducks bite me, and if
you just
got to
pace yourself.
I just don't see how that could work.
One horse-sized duck. Ducks fly. They've got hollow bones. I don't know if that duck is going to be structurally sound. I don't think it would pass an inspection.
Just one stare to that horse-sized duck, and you're good.
You have a weapon?
Yeah.
Yeah, Steve, would you clarify, is this a bare knuckles fight? Is this a pit fighter situation against the horse-sized duck? You know what? Actually, I think I could take either of them. And I feel like there's a real chance that I could take both of them at the same time.
Oh, wow.
So bring it on.
Bold, yeah. Bold.
Jeremy says, without Schmidt, who has the best smiles per 60? I think we both agree on this. I'll just count to three and we'll say the name out loud at the same time.
All right.
One, two, three. Burakovsky.
Burakovsky.
Boom, son. Amanda Ann asks, how awesome is Craig Lachlan's podcast going to be?
Dude, did you see his promo for it? It had smoke.
It had, I did not see the promo.
Behind the logo.
As soon as he's got, like, as soon as they actually have, like, the link up, we'll do a story on it. I don't do a promo unless I can subscribe to your thing. All right, Kyle, I'm super excited. Locker's the best. I enjoy his opinions, even if I disagree with him. I don't actually understand this next one. Kyle asks, better beer drinker, Scone-told Steve Austin. Scone-toed Steve Austin or the Sandman. Who is the Sandman?
He's also a wrestler.
Oh. There's like six comic book characters named Sandman. So I was thinking they were talking about
too. I mean,
Morpheus, the Lord of Dreams.
I'm gonna go with the Sandman, and the reason why is because, you know, whenever you actually see Stone Cold drink beer, none of it actually gets in his mouth.
Very little, like, of the liquid.
Yeah, he kind of bangs three together and then he's pouring them into his mouth, but like only like one thousandth of that is actually getting in his mouth. And then he tosses it in the crowd. I mean, I think Stone Cold Steve Austin is one of the worst beer drinkers of all time.
He's more of a sangria guy too, or like a nice rosé. All right. Elise asks, how can I be a How can I be a happier DC sports fan? LOL, nothing matters. Just say that to yourself two or three times a day and everything will be great. Your thoughts, Ian?
Read us. I don't know.
Jonathan asks, what is the greatest undisputed one-hit wonder of all time, and why is it There It Is by Tag Team? I listen to a lot of 90s music, and there's a lot of bands that really only had one hit that I'm pretty into.
There were many in the 90s, too.
All right, I'm just going to pull up a big list of one-hit wonders, and we'll do it from the 90s. One-hit wonders of the 90s, and we'll just start pulling it out here. Okay, one-hit wonders of the 1990s. Jive Bunny and the Master Mixer, Swing the Mood, no idea. Shauna, I Want You, no idea. Biz Markie, Just a Friend, that's a classic. Michael Penn, No Myth. Do you remember that song?
Yes, that's up there.
Romeo and Black Jeans by Sean Penn's less talented brother. You know what? Four Non Blondes, What's Up? That was a one-hit wonder. Sinead O'Connor, Nothing Compares to You. I disagree with Sinead O'Connor being termed a one-hit wonder. She's done a bunch of records, and a lot of them are really good. Calloway, I Want to Be Rich. I love that song. This is a fun list.
Who was the band that did, like, Butterfly?
That was Crazy Town.
Yeah.
Remember Butterfly? Sugar. Yeah, that's a mess. Let's go all the way. Ooh, the Bartman. Okay, so 1999, Sean Mullins' Lullaby. Emil, Can I Get a what? No, that's not that song. Is that that song? Is that just a Jay-Z song that like someone else got credit for? Save Tonight by Eagle Eye Cherry, who is Nana Cherry's little brother or something. That was a good jam. New Radicals, You Get What You Give. You know what? I'm going with that one. New Radicals, You Get What You Give is a wonderful song. Yes, my answer.
I would give that to you. I can tell you the worst one-hit wonder, which was recently. It was that Calypso song where it's like, I'm going to marry her anyway. Who is that?
I don't know this.
Wait.
The sound of Ian typing.
What is it called?
I feel like you may have listened to more pop radio than I do.
It was Magic's Rude.
Never heard of it.
You've never? Yes, you have. You've heard it in a grocery store.
I've never heard Despacito. Sure.
Okay. Why you gotta be so rude? Don't you know I'm human too?
I like this so far.
Why you gotta be so rude? I'm gonna marry her anyway. Marry that girl. Marry her anyway. Marry that girl.
A little twist there, huh?
Yeah. No matter what you say, marry that girl. And we'll be a family. Why you gotta be so rude? And that's the chorus. And then there's like it's like these four white dudes, and then it's randomly like Calypso. I just
that hurts.
Worst song. I think that's the worst song ever. And I actually, when I hear it, I want to kill people.
I disagree. A hot take opinion here. If you guys are ready for it, you guys can cook your dinner on this one. The worst song of all time is Annie's 12 years old and too much you'll be a what's that song? Wrong Way by Sublime. That song is effing terrible. Oh, everything that Sublime ever did is an abomination. Oh, I hate Sublime. Oh, Sublime. Final question for Mahesh. Save this one for last. When Chipotle gets queso, will Ian switch sides?
Nope, never. I mean, it's not the queso that makes me love Chipotle. I mean, yeah, Qdoba. It's the ingredients, the freshness, it just tastes better. Like, I don't know what it is about Chipotle, but like it tastes dry. Like it doesn't taste good. And you're going to the wrong Chipotle. I have an update.
You really got to go to one. Okay, go ahead.
I haven't eaten Qdoba in like 2 years since my job, you know, we stopped working out in Colombia and we became like a work from home company. And so the only Mexican food I eat now is from Cafe Rio, and that might be my new number one.
Cafe Rio is good. Have you been to the Mexican place? I think it's called Cafe Bueno on E Street. Pretty bomber.
No, I haven't.
It's by the Laboring Sons Alley by that liquor store and that 7-Eleven and the laundromat.
Oh, I don't know it's about it.
Pretty bomb ass tacos and burritos. I recommend it. Just for the record, we don't really have a lot of Qdoba. I pronounce it Qdoba, not Qdoba. I don't really know what's going on with your pronunciation there. I just think it's an Ian
Didn't
thing.
Did you once say that it was a silent Q, so it should be Doba?
That sounds like something stupid I would say, yes. All right, Ian, thank you so much for answering these questions. Thank you so much for our Facebook cretins and our beloved Patreon patrons for asking them. Maybe there'll be some hockey news before long.
Oh, Jesus, please.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.
This has been Russian Machine Never Breaks, the podcast. But now, it's over. Nothing to see here. Move along.